This is the MLW Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host Striga, as always joined by Dylan. First off, before we go into any of our topics that we planned to discuss, of course I and Dylan also, we wanted to address the incredible speaking out movement right now. I think you can call it a movement because The extent of it is just so mind-blowing. And I mean, you could assume that stuff like that would be happening in wrestling from following some timelines and from people calling out names, certain names. So in the case of some names, I was absolutely not surprised. In other cases, I was surprised. In a few cases, I was shocked to what degree this happened. It's really overwhelming in a lot of senses, Dylan, right now.
Absolutely. So much going on in the world of wrestling, and it came out that, you know, a lot of people have really been a direct part or maybe some kind of in collusion with people who are abusing people in wrestling, you know, sexually, sometimes even otherwise, when it comes to wrestlers and trainers and things like that. You mentioned it's a movement, and especially in Britain, and I think this is we talked about this a little bit. This really hasn't affected Japanese wrestling too much. There's been a couple of guys with Japanese ties that were mentioned, but a couple of guys with American ties, too. Even in WWE is high up. There have been people that have been there. But Brit Rez has really taken a lot of hit in Europe, which is where you are a European person, if people aren't aware. And you have a very close ties with your home, you know, your home company, WXW as well, which has had some people. But in England especially, there's been so many people. You mentioned it was a movement. And I mean, when is wrestling going to get talked about by BBC a lot of times unless this had happened, like this sort of level of thing? So it was truly a terrible sight, like some awful, like sickening stories, to be honest with you. If you see a lot of the people coming out, and a lot of the women and men coming out are so brave, I would have to say, to put these stories out there and have personal details like this of some really vulnerable times in their lives and that they've had to relive all over again. So I really just want to say that, I mean, I really support all these people out there that have gone through this, and I hate that it's gone through this, and I hate that so many people are suffering when it comes to this wrestling game. And I mentioned it off the air to you, Striga. One thing that hurts me the most is that a lot of people that got called out or brought out, or, you know, basically some people have really been at the forefront of all of this, but regardless, there's been a few people out there that people really believed in. You know, when it comes to, they put their hearts into them, they really believed them. It was because of their wrestling, their political stuff they said online, their brand, whatever. You know, whatever the reason is, a lot of people out there were big fans, and they really believed them in their hearts. And now they're having to suffer, too, because they found out about all these disgusting actions and other things that have happened. So my heart really goes out to all the fans out there that have been affected by this, but especially all the victims, obviously. It's just a very crazy thing that nobody could have expected, but it really feels like you said, it's become a movement, and perhaps this is the thing that can spark some change.
I mean, I absolutely 100% admire the bravery of all these women and men coming out, coming forward, basically everybody who came forward deserves absolute admiration at this point to come forward with their story. And what you said is absolutely true, and I want to add that there's a lot of things that I've been going through in my head, because of course I've been at a lot of these after show parties, I have been at a lot of these shows, and people that I know have come forward with stories that happened to them at shows or in the surrounding of shows. Abuse that happened to them at the surroundings of wrestling events where I probably have been. So it is absolutely, to me, I have to think that a lot of us, including me, have been walking around with blinders to not see some of the stuff that was going on. And that is something that has to change, definitely. And that is why it's so important that a lot of people have come forward with their stories. And the change can't begin when all of us are leaving wrestling and abandoning wrestling, you know. You've been around wrestling from the other side. I've been around wrestling as a fan. And, you know, wrestling has always been there for me for over 20 years now. And I'm not ready to abandon it. Even though the stuff is horrendous and horrible that has come out. Wrestling is what I love to watch. It is what I love to talk about. It is where I made a lot of friends. And, I mean, I can understand people being fed up with it now and people being crushed and people not wanting to follow it anymore through this, but I don't think that it actually helps. I think what is needed now is a very good and solid foundation to build it up again and to support those who want to build it, who want to rebuild it in a way that everybody can feel safe around wrestling.
Absolutely. You know, for me, on a personal level, wrestling has been so important to me. And with everything that I've gone through, and specifically the time when I really did wrestle more when I was much younger, that was a life-changing time in my entire life, you know. Wrestling, and I don't say this lightly or to sound cool, wrestling really did save my life in a lot of ways, you know. And I don't think wrestling is to blame for a lot of this, to be honest with you. It's the system and the culture surrounding it that is the problem. You know, wrestling in and of itself is not that much different than any martial art or sport that you could try out and do or play or whatever. But it's the culture surrounding it, and a lot of things, you know, you go on Twitter, you see this kind of phrase a lot, but the boys club mentality of it that's been going on, and a lot of the stuff that's been going on in training specifically, which I mean, if you look at a lot of the stories, a lot of them are people that are either, you know, people training others, training women, or somebody who maybe was a big star like Joey Ryan, who went with all of his many accusations that he has against him. Where these guys, and we mentioned it off the air, you said this first, but I'm going to repeat it. These guys really felt like they were untouchable. You know, a lot of these dudes that were positions of power over the ones they were abusing. So if we can kind of change, and everybody together, it's not just going to be one person or one group. It's everybody together in wrestling. If we can all get together and say, no, this is not okay anymore, then I think that's going to be a great part. And something that really shocked me too, String, is if you look at a lot of the accusations, a lot of them are modern, but some people have come out that were around since like 2004 when the Brit Res scene was like, you know, really in the dumps in the FWC days. It's like this stuff is not just something that happened, you know, 3-4 years ago. This kind of thing has been happening in wrestling for a long, long, long time. Far beyond any accusers or things that we know about now, this sort of actions and these sort of predatory behavior has been a staple of wrestling in all kinds of places. You know, like basically the whole world of wrestling for decades and decades. And that's kind of harrowing to think about. And I think, you know, there's been stories about all kinds of people in the past, but now this, with everybody coming out and so many people coming out, maybe not everybody, but so many people coming out that we're now, you know, like, it's a big wake-up call to the entire world of wrestling, I feel like, especially in the English-speaking sector of the world. I think this has been a huge wake-up call to a lot of people that this is not okay. We've already seen people like, you know, people, women getting hired in positions on Britres companies in kind of their own liaison positions. So I think we're going to see some more changes as time goes along, and I think this was a great first step of that. It's just, it's such a, it's like, you know, it's almost like climbing Mount Everest in wrestling with all the bad stuff that's been happening. But this is a really great start, and I hopefully this can lead to some good things. So in the future, 10, 20 years from now, we never have another speaking out movement on Twitter where people have to feel this way and have had to suffer through so much.
Absolutely. Having women in positions of power is extremely important. Having diverse people in positions of power is extremely important. So that is a good way to start, and I'm glad that a lot of companies now are looking into the process of changing their structures, and I hope that that will change wrestling for the better. And as I said, at this point now, we can't give any scene or any company the benefit of the doubt, really, at this point. So that'll probably be more stuff to talk about. Jumping over to Japan, it's really hard to even begin talking about this because wrestling in Japan is still so protected, so we can't really make any assumptions of the level that abuse is happening there. We have stories, of course. We can give a shout out to the Pure and the Rough guys again. They did a double shot on the dark stories of Pure. They've named a lot of these stories. When Isaac was on here, we've talked about Hiroshi Hase and the incident that came out about him. Mm-hmm. And that is only the very top of what we know.
That's true. And that wasn't even in wrestling. That's another thing. This to me also isn't just a wrestling issue.
No.
Like all of this. This is a anybody in power issue in entertainment or life itself. You know, so many people have abused other people. It's just, it's terrifying to me to even think that way. That has happened. And like I said, that Hase thing was with like young women literally off the streets, you know, like the most vulnerable people I could imagine. And he still did that. So I can't imagine how that would happen. In wrestling, if there is one thing that could maybe not change it in terms of things specifically, but the sheer number of it is the fact that the companies are separated by gender. So, mm-hmm. like, that would lead to less opportunities for this. Not to say that it's never happened, but there would be less opportunities for that in an all-women's company. Or maybe there were people in power in men companies that were abusing men that were trainees, which we've heard stories about that before. Women on women, I'm sure it's happened before, too. So, you know, we just don't know, unfortunately, because we're not native Japanese people. We don't have the insight into these companies, and things are so secretive anyway. It would be very hard to even get into that. But if we were going to say one thing, you know, there were people in New Japan that were listed as people like Ospreay. He's been on these lists. Zack Sabre Jr., he's been speculated on. He's definitely been friends with a lot of people that have been involved with these lists. I just think, and I know, and that's something I saw on Twitter too, and I think it's worth mentioning because we're about to get into the New Japan Cup. When it came time for his matches, people that were his biggest fans, this is kind of what I mentioned earlier, they didn't even want to watch it because he hadn't said anything.
I gotta admit that it was hard for me to keep my mind at his match when I watched it too. I can't make any assumptions, but it surely is not good to see someone not say anything about this subject right now.
Especially someone like him who, you know, in other cases where there's been perceived injustices or true injustices, he's always been one of the first ones to speak out, you know, like and have a zany catchphrase that he could put on a t-shirt. And now when things, there's heat on him, maybe heat on his friends, he's disappeared. Like that's, and I'm not normally the one to like push people like to say if they maybe, because who knows what his feelings are. He's probably, like, let's just say the best case scenario is happening. He's completely innocent and he never knew anything about any of this. He has to be going through a whirlwind of emotions right now, because he was close friends with somebody like a Marty Scurll, Travis Banks, you know, like these guys who are right in the thick of it. So he is probably feeling all kinds of stuff. And that's, again, the best case scenario. I'm not saying it's true, but I think that's a little different when he's put himself in this position rather than, like, okay, for example, I saw people getting mad at, like, Drew McIntyre and Becky Lynch in WWE. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference because those guys are, like, walking on eggshells 99.9% of the time anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, they've never been, like, hyper activists or anything, like, on Twitter. So for them to not say anything or take a day or two to reach out to people or whatever, I could give them much more of a pass than someone like Zach, who's the first one to point the finger at anybody else. And now that things have gone down with him and his friends, he's gone silent. And we don't know. We don't know what his opinions are, what he would say. And I'm sure there's a lot of people, too, that even if they are, in a sense, they're scared of saying the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, because it's a really complicated issue. Just like you just now. I like, you know, you're trying to figure out the right words. And
yeah,
this is,
it's not easy.
But there are no words. You know, like, there are no good words to figure out about this. So, you know, I know a lot of people really felt that way about Zach. To me, I think from a company standpoint, Japan's such a different animal, and these guys have been away from the scene, because this is something that I've seen a lot of people question about. People were messaging me about this a lot, specifically about Ospreay, as that came out with his involvement with Pollyanna, a women's wrestler, who there was all kinds of stuff going on. He defended somebody who abused her and ended up turning it against her and getting her blacklisted for all intents and purposes, and there's been proof out there that he was very heavily involved in that. And a lot of people are saying, hey, like, what's New Japan going to do? And I just fear that no matter what comes out, it's going to be really – they're not – it would actually be really easy for them to do it, to be honest with you. They own the company. But I don't think they will, unfortunately, unless there's some dramatic, like, drastic evidence against somebody.
I mean, they
like
they didn't even do anything about Tomoaki Honma when the news about his – it was his wife, right? Came out.
Yeah, yeah. That was a little different, but, you know, if that happened in America, he would have been fired. Mm-hmm. like at that end. I don't know really what that was, because there was a lot of complicated stuff with that.
Yeah.
And actually, people on the roster even kind of supported him, like, you know.
That was a weird story, definitely, because it was kind of a double accusation from both sides. Definitely not easy.
But even still, if that had happened here, he would have been fired.
Yeah.
You know, like regardless of whatever happened, like whatever reasons there were or what happened, the accusation enough is, you know, that alone is enough to get him fired here. In Japan, it's clear they took a very different aspect to it. But, you know, even people on the roster, like Tanahashi was, you know, working out with him, posted videos and stuff after that. You don't really know the full context of all that, again, because we're not Japanese and we're not really privy to all of this stuff. So I don't know what the deal was with that, but they've seen that even with people, you know, like when Elgin was in New Japan, you know, Tanahashi kind of shied away from him, and they were friends at first, but then suddenly they, you know, like when all this happened. So, and, you know, he's somebody that's been, again, faced with some accusations or whatever when it comes to this. But just right now, like you said, New Japan historically has not done a lot. Even when people in Japan, like, have gone under scandal or anything like that, they did do something about Taka Michinoku, though. He doesn't work there anymore. You would presume that they had some role in that. Maybe he just left on his own. But he's not there anymore after his accusations as well. So it's just kind of weird how they handle things. It's things that we can't really understand or fully grasp, I feel like.
Yes.
There. But my hunch is that nothing's really going to come of this. When it comes to New Japan, the only thing that would make me think differently is that these guys are not native Japanese, too. And that's a big difference between the people we've been talking about, Honma and Taka. These guys are not native Japanese. Their biggest appeal is to foreign fans, ultimately. And we've seen how important that has been for New Japan as a company in the past few years, expanding to USA, expanding to Great Britain, and places like that. So if there was some kind of big thing there, and we've seen that has an effect on their bottom line in these places, I could see them doing that. But also another thing is that it's not what it was even a few years ago. Now that AEW's around, they haven't ran America as much. The virus probably had a lot to do with that this year especially, but it already felt like it was kind of cooling down from where it used to be. So you just don't know what their thoughts are on this. I just feel like it would be easy if they wanted to get rid of these guys. It wouldn't be the end of the world, to be honest with you, for their business or anything like that. I honestly don't think these guys are difference makers at all in Japan, like either one of them. But you might love their wrestling. They might have good business. But from a business, like a fan standpoint in Japan, Ospreay's junior best of Super Junior final didn't do that great. Zack and Okada wasn't a strong drawing title match either. So to me, these guys don't really mean a lot to business. They have put a lot in Ospreay, so I could see Gato maybe having some kind of sentimental feelings for that because it felt like they were building him up for something. But to me, it goes beyond all of that. If you have guys on the roster, it's just a terrible look and terrible optics for your company. And morally, any company is going to have to deal with these sorts of dark situations. I just hope that maybe they take into account their foreign fans as much as the native fans on these sorts of situations.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, nothing more to add from my side. I just hope that everybody continues to support people who are speaking out.
Oh, absolutely.
And, yeah, from there, I hope we move to a better future in wrestling. I honestly believe that we are at this point where there is no going back to times like it has been before. And that makes me, in a way, even though everything is horrible to follow and these stories are absolutely gruesome at a lot of points, makes me somewhat optimistic that wrestling will change for the better.
Absolutely. I think we're going to see it now. A lot of the big names that were involved in this, I don't think there's any coming back for somebody like a Joey Ryan or a David Starr. You know, like, I can't see anyone wanting to work with him or book him just due to everything involved with that. So a lot of these guys are going to be weeded out that have committed crimes and done terrible things. And now, thanks to the bravery of these people now, that maybe, because a lot of the stuff, as we've seen, have been hidden in and held in for years. You know, it's not just something that happened yesterday. They're talking about something that happened years ago. But thanks to that, if something like that did happen again and somebody was to do something, now there's a much better environment. And hopefully there will be a much better environment with the women with power that we talked about earlier and the greater awareness on just how big. Because I think everybody probably expected with every walk in life that there's something like this. But when you're seeing hundreds of guys and 50,000 tweets and at the same time, that's really eye-opening. So now if next time something like that was to happen, and God forbid it does, hopefully it would never happen. But if it did, that person would be canned right away. Mm-hmm. Like there would be years of success or anything like that or fan base or any of that bullshit. They would be gone right away, which is exactly what they deserve. If you abuse somebody in any way, to me, you belong in jail. Like, you know, in my opinion, you belong in jail, definitely not in wrestling. So hopefully we reach that point now to where if somebody does that, they have to have, you know, like their career is tarnished forever, their legacy is tarnished forever, and they never get away with it like these guys have been doing for the past years.
I agree. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
We had to get this out there. Definitely, we. Not that we felt obligated to only talk about it. We discussed this. First thing we discussed off the air was this, and there's. It's something that we felt was needed to talk about.
I bet nearly all of our listeners already felt that way anyway. Mm-hmm. That, like, that's what was a big thing they were thinking about personally, and any wrestling fan, I think, has this on their mind.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, I definitely wanted to talk about it myself and get those thoughts out there. But I, you know, I don't think I'm saying anything controversial by saying those people should be in jail.
It's
not about that, though, because everybody needs to support and come together on this, you know. And some people are still going to be stuck in those bullshit times of the past. You know, like I said, unfortunately, we got to get rid of these assholes. Like, yeah. You know, like that's how I feel about it. When I see people like that, I say, get rid of these guys.
Yeah. And it's important that that names are named, names are dropped. That's happening on Twitter right now, so that is good. All right. There is no easy transition from here, but the reason that we two agreed to talk today was the New Japan Cup, and we already set this up last week when we did the Noah show for our Patreon. We basically set this day to talk about the first round of the New Japan Cup. And the first round is now behind us, with the first round ending today in Curricon Hall. They were in Curricon Hall for their shows on June 22nd and June 23rd. And last week, they actually used a different building. The X Theater Roppongi is what they used. First of all, Dylan, what did you think about the look that Empty Arena New Japan came across?
I think that it was very how I would expect it. It wasn't anything too special or crazy, but it also wasn't bad either. Like, Dragon Gate's version, I think, was just very bad optics of how they work aesthetically, whereas Noah's version, the arena and everything is pretty nice. Maybe just some of their booking has not blended well to these empty arena shows. But here, I think the New Japan version, I think the arenas were very nice and about as exactly as I would expect a New Japan empty arena show to look.
Yeah, the thing that I took away when I saw the empty Curricon Hall was that I thought, well, it would be weird if New Japan would run an empty Shinkiba First Ring or an empty 2AW Square. That wouldn't feel like New Japan as the leader of the wrestling industry in Japan. So an empty Curricon Hall felt more like it, if you know what I mean. And so the optics, I thought, was good. And basically, for the most time, they concentrated on their tournament. They always added one more match, which led the shows to be between 2 and 2.5 hours. And I felt that 2 to 2.5 hours is a very good length for a show in these times with an empty arena. We've been talking about this on and off on our shows. When we talked about All Japan and their shows, they've mostly been around 2 hours as well. DDT, their TV shows, have been around 2 hours, a little longer, 2:20 maybe. But I thought the length of all the shows was really good.
Oh, absolutely. I love the format of their shows. That's something where they really have a one-up on some of these other companies. And it's something we've mentioned before on this show, that they cut out all the meaningless stuff that people really don't care about that much, to be perfectly honest. And they added one non-tournament match, and usually, outside of the third show, it was usually build-up for the next night, which let them do a little bit of the storylines and stuff, which a lot of people would say are the purpose of, like, in the G1, the undercard tags. Here you had that with one match, and I made this point on the Patreon. On the Patreon, I've covered every show live, by the way, so I'll try not to repeat myself too much, but I will repeat this point, that I think that people are more likely to watch this extra match here than if it were 5 extra matches, like on the G1 shows. It's like, to me, that means they're just going to skip over all of them and get to the G1 matches. Here, if you have an extra match, I think they'll just say, ah, screw it. Like, here's this one extra match, I can get through it. Here's this Lucy Kugion match, I can get through it.
And in most cases, it was well-placed as in between the tournament matches, kind of as a buffer between them. So it was usually placed well, much like on the first day of the tournament, where they placed the 8-man tag as the third match between the tournament matches, with Suzuki-gun of Minoru Suzuki, Taichi, Kanemaru, and Zack Sabre Jr. defeating Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kota Ibushi, Yuji Nagata, and Yuya Uemura, who, by the way, looks shockingly like a young Isaiah Zanada. I want to add this. It started all with Togi Makabe going over Yota Tsuji in 8 minutes and 41 seconds, and I really loved the approach that Yota Tsuji took in the match, going after Togi Makabe right away, and what ended up being a very nice brawl and power match between two guys that their styles are similar. Whereas Yota Tsuji, of course, is much younger and much more able to move around in the ring. But I thought Makabe did very well here.
Yeah, it was a fun match. I think Makabe brought the energy against somebody that he felt like he could have a good stylistic clash with. And Tsuji, I thought, did a good job as well. These two were very interesting when it comes to... I liked that the effort that Makabe brought led into the finish where he didn't even have to use the King Kong knee drop, to win. He won with a German suplex. I really appreciated that. I thought these two were a good stylistic pair, and was happy to see this match. On the Patreon, I've been rating every match. I've eschewed star ratings for this tournament. Instead, I've been a company man, Striga, and gone to the cage match ratings, I hear, which is a very, very similar format, just double the numbers, pretty much. But this one, here's my scale, basically. So just to give some context on what I give these numbered ratings, 5 and up is like a thumbs up for me. Like 5 is right there as like worth watching, and 7 would be like recommended. Like anything above 7, like 7 or above is like a good match. But 5 and 6 is like good matches, but you don't have to watch them. But I gave this, I thought this was an easy 5 here. I thought this was a solid match and not bad at all for either man.
Yeah, I really liked it, and the cageman uses land between 5 and 6 too, 5.35. So that was really good, a good start to the tournament. Then we had Toru Yano against Yado. Absolutely atrocious.
I gave this 0 on the cage match ratings.
Yado, at this point, he can't even pretend to be a threat anymore in the ring. This guy, and I noted, when I thought again about this show, I noted that I can't believe that Manabu Nakanishi is retired while Yado is still performing and being in the New Japan Cup. Someone pointed that out on their Twitter too. In theory, if Yado would have sneaked his way through this tournament, in theory, Yado would receive a shot at the double championship. I mean, he was in this tournament. That is crazy.
Can you imagine?
No, but that's they told us that Yado and Ghetto are potentially guys that would be in line for a title shot because they are in this tournament.
Yes. What a title shot that could have been with Yano versus Naito. So here's the thing. I have a little bit of, I rated this 0, and I think deservedly so out of 10. But I didn't hate this like that much, and I'll tell you why. My expectations for this were a 0, and they gave me a 0. So I can't be that mad at it when my expectations were so low that I thought this was going to be terrible. Even by, everybody knows I'm not really a huge fan of Yano tournament matches. But even by those standards, I knew that this was going to suck. And it did. Like, it's like, what were you expecting? So I can't get that upset about it and say, like, this ruined the show for me or anything. I just thought it was a terrible match, as I expected.
The idea of having this match as a 9-minute match was terrible.
That was really bad, but to me, a lot of the stuff is stuff we would see in all the, like, the Yano matches, like, earlier on. Just, again, Yano's less mobile than many of his other opponents.
Yeah, but on the other side, we've seen 3 or 4 minute Toru Yano matches in the G1 Climax.
And those are much better than the one.
Yeah.
Like I said, I would definitely agree with you. I don't know why this was 9 minutes, but there were a couple of matches that had some questionable lengths on this tournament so far, but this was definitely near the top of the list. I don't know. Like I said, I didn't hate it, even though it was a 0 for me on wrestling-wise, but a lot of people were like, this is one of the worst matches ever, and stuff like that I saw, and, like, one of the worst matches of the year in New Japan, and it was. To be honest, like, it was, but still, I can't say that it, like, took away from the enjoyment of the other matches of the first night, which I thought were surprisingly good.
Yeah, exactly. Yomo Takahashi against Tomoki Honma, 6.72 right now, 18 minutes and 45 seconds. I actually thought this was a good match between the two. Hiromo, of course, is able to have a good match with someone who is as immobile as Tomoaki Honma is, even though Honma, again, totally over-delivered when it comes to taking bumps. It's crazy to think that he is still willing to take these bumps off the apron. And it's crazy that he is still able to get up from these. So, yeah, this, in my opinion, was a good match.
I really like this. I thought this overachieved from what I expected, because when you see 2020 Honma, you know, and we still saw some of that earlier on where it's like, this guy can barely move, like pretty much. He's very, very broken down, not near his prime form. But somehow, like at some point in this match, things really ended up turning around, and we started to see Honma do some stuff, including an amazing Death Valley driver bump on the apron, bravely took for some reason here. But suddenly he went, you know, they really worked the story around the Kokeshis. He missed every one of them, of course. But they started to get that magic back of the old Honma here. And I thought that was so impressive by Hiromu. Obviously, with him, it's like a lot of the early parts were him kind of like working a match around this broomstick like he was Fujimoto in Ice Ribbon. That's kind of what it was like for the early part. But then suddenly Honma fired up, took some big bumps, and you could tell that I think these guys, too, they might have had some kind of like connection, because Honma had his serious neck injury and Hiromu also had his neck injury. So if Honma was going to bring it against anybody, it was going to be Hiromu.
It was the perfect match, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is the best possible match Honma can have, and I hope that they're not thinking about putting him in there like more regularly or anything like that, because I thought this was a really strong match. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yep.
But it's clear that Hiromu was the one kind of that caused this. And if nothing else, it was a lot better than his match last year in the New Japan Cup, which was, I think, it might have been even longer than this one. Even with a crowd, it still didn't matter. It was still too long.
Yeah, a match that was a little longer than the aforementioned one was the main event between Tomohiro Ishii and El Desperado, but deservingly so. I thought this match was absolutely excellent. I loved every minute of it. And that's not only because of Tomohiro Ishii. I once again came off being so impressed by El Desperado and his work. I think that the guy behind the character, so Kyosuke Mikami, he has put on so much work into being El Desperado and not just playing El Desperado, if you know what I mean. This guy is in the ring, he is the gimmick. And outside the ring, he is the gimmick. At first, it seemed like this wouldn't really fit him well. Remember when he came back first and he had this guitar with him? And the only thing that is left of this gimmick, of this early stages of the gimmick, pretty much is the move that he has that is still named Guitarra de Angel. But everything else, he has changed man ever since he turned heel, or changed gimmick ever since Desperado turned heel. And the work that he put in against Tomohiro Ishii, in my opinion, once again was absolutely excellent. He worked over Ishii's leg, and he, as a junior, had a great fiery exchange with Ishii as well, and that is, in my opinion, where Ishii excels as well. He, of course, is great against the big guys too, but in my opinion, he's especially great when he gets to work with these junior heavyweights that he's able to elevate to a level where you'd buy that the junior heavyweight would be a threat to the heavyweight. And it came down to an excellent finishing stretch, and I want to point out too that what I love about Tomohiro Ishii's vertical drop brainbuster is that he always, before dropping the guy, he kind of bends the leg to make you believe that he's putting extra pressure on the guy that is going down, you know? And in this match, he could not do that because his other leg was worked over so much by El Desperado, so he would lose his footing if he had bended the leg here in this situation. That put the match over the top for me, so you can hear it from me putting it over it. I absolutely loved this.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people did. And I really liked it as well. I thought it was a very good match, good performance from Desperado here. And I agree with you that the guy behind the gimmick was a really strong wrestler, and it is still a really strong wrestler as well. I remember when he was a young lion, it was a lot different than when he was Desperado. He was much more of like an underdog, fiery babyface. And I was thinking, man, this guy is like a really good young lion. And this is a point I brought up, and I'm kind of going away from the match here, because I talked a little bit about there, but I'd love to hear your opinion on this, because I think he's a perfect poster child for this. Because I like him as a wrestler, don't get me wrong, I think he's a good worker, but he's never really had that success, even in the junior division, of being a top guy, or like the ace of the juniors. And I was thinking about this, because you have someone like him, and someone we're going to talk about later, Evil. Somebody that, when he was a young lion, was slated to be the next guy. Like, he was in commercials with Tanahashi's Watanabe at this point. Like, he was going to be a big star. And these guys went away and had these drastically altered gimmicks when they came back. Like, Desperado, he's living the gimmick, but that's not him. Like, that's not Mikami. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a gimmick that he's working. And yet we see somebody like someone like Sho Tanaka, who, I mean, he lost his last name. Someone like Hiromu, who has his name. These guys are much more themselves, but I feel like they're higher on the totem pole than these gimmicked guys. So everybody really mentions these Young Lion excursions, and I would definitely agree that it's a great system. But I think New Japan has gotten a little too cute with the gimmicks and stuff, and we've seen that the fans have taken more to more natural guys when they come back.
I know where we're coming from, and it kind of feels that this is a thing that kind of got out of control. Because they wanted to top what the last guy returning from excursion got as a gimmick.
Yeah.
I mean, we had Evil, then we had Roppongi 3K, we had Switchblade.
Yeah, he's another one. Very different than his natural self with his character. And now we're seeing the Grandmaster, who we didn't really talk about, but they played the video on the show for
him. This guy returns as a wizard, that has gotten totally out of control, definitely.
Let's hope that doesn't happen. because he's another one, like Mikami. He actually reminded me a lot of Desperado as a young lion. When he was around Kawato, he reminded me a lot of him before he left. But he was on a bigger stage with more fans than Mikami was. Mm-hmm. But I thought, man, this guy's got a ton of great baby face fire. Like, he could be a real big, you know, like, the fans could rally behind this guy. His excursion didn't go great, to say the least. I watched all of it. It was pretty bad. But he was also miscast as a heel a lot of the times in Mexico. So I wanted to see him come back just as himself and, you know, like, be who he was before, but with more credibility. Instead, it's like they're giving him this Grandmaster thing, and that really got me thinking. I think that's what spurred this thought process when I was reviewing the show live, was like, man, these gimmicked guys, they just don't get over as much as the natural guys like Hiromu and stuff. That's just something I really wanted to point out. It's something that nobody really talks about. But I think we've got enough evidence now that it's at least worth discussing. Because Desperado, and look, he's a really talented guy. He was great in Mexico as Nama Hagway. Desperado's a really good worker, but here he goes out with Ishii. Had a good match. I liked it. But I feel like, will he ever be able to take a step forward as any kind of main guy? I don't know if that's possible in this junior division, especially if Hiromu's there. How is he going to overcome somebody like that? I think he would have been better off if he were just himself. That was really my main thinking point on this, because he's a really talented worker. We saw it again in this match.
Yep, absolutely. So,
just to say, I will say this, though. I will disagree with you a little bit on the matches, because I think I had more of an emotional attachment to the Hiromu match than this one. Mm-hmm. But I had both the same number rating. I had them both 7, both definitely recommended, and very good matches from both. So I thought this first show was really strong, actually. Outside of the Yano match, obviously, I enjoyed all three of the other matches.
Yeah. Okay, that is the first day then. The second day has a current order rating of 5.87. And I gotta say, there is not so much to talk about here, because we didn't have like these two really great matches. We had one outstanding match on this show with Yuji Nagata going over Minoru Suzuki. 20 minutes. 4.5 stars from Dave Meltzer, 8.42 from Cage Match. I mean, it was absolutely crazy to see these two guys just slapping the total shit out of one another. And what made this even better was Marty Asami reffing the match. Which one was it? It was one from the third day of the New Japan Cup that he reffed too. I think it was the main event too. I think it was the Taichi and Tanahashi one, which he reffed too. And Mattia Sami is just absolutely great with his facial expressions, especially here in this Suzuki versus Nuji Nagata match. Whenever someone hit a big slap on the other, Mattia Sami looked like someone was dying in the ring. And that put it over to another degree, and I really thought, some people disagreed with me on Twitter on this take, but I thought that these two guys came out there to have a fight with one another and not to necessarily play to an audience that wasn't there. Yeah. So that, in my opinion, made it so great that it was just Minoru Suzuki and Yuji Nagata beating each other up.
Man, I'm on your side now, because I thought that same thing, that this was more like a fight, you know, more than anything. Like, the number of wrestling moves in this match, if you just want to grade a match by moves, this was as unspectacular as you can get.
If you grade a match by move, this is a 1 of 10.
Yeah, but the intensity and the way they wrestled with these lack of moves, it was all basically strikes, which to me made it even better. You know, like I said, they did so much with so little here, and they fought so hard. Every strike, like you said, was like devastating. They sold it amazingly, too. Suzuki had great facial expressions and great confidence, too, which I thought was smart to play this, because historically, in the last few years, they've really pushed Suzuki more than Nagata here. So I liked that he was like extra cocky earlier on, like he would put his hands behind his back and give Nagata a chance to, like, hit me. And then they did some good stuff there. The only thing that I that really took this match down a little bit for me was the outside stuff. I thought they got a little carried away into everything going on there, but it was very minor. This, to me, was better than anything on night one, and I liked all the matches on night one except for one, but still, I thought this was the match of the tournament to this point, and I thought they both did a hell of a job. And I loved the finishing stretch too, where they had a surprise victory for me, but this was one of your wishes, that Nagata face Okada. So I was very happy for you. I thought Suzuki was going to win, but here we had Nagata get the win. I was very happy to see that. So this was a great match. I had this as an 8.
Yeah. I mean, Suzuki has been in the spotlight so many times in the past years, and Yuji Nagata has not. We've talked about him, that he had his final run in the G1 Climax. We have been talking about this on our Patreon years ago. Now he is in the second round of the New Japan Cup, where he faces the big guy in the company. So that is great that Nagata is getting this run now.
So deserved, a great, even that, such a great worker. Every time he gets a big match, brother steps up. So a huge fan of Nagata, and I love that he gets the shot. And I was very happy to be wrong, because I thought Suzuki would win. This was one of only two matches I picked wrong when I was going over the tournament, but this was one of them, and I was happy. I was happy both times, actually, to be wrong, but this was a great match. I really loved it.
Then we had two matches in the opening that were very similar from the approach of it, because Gabriel Kidd lost to Taiji Ishimori and Yuya Uemura lost to Yoshinobu Kanemaru. So in both cases, the veteran beating the young lion, but they gave the young lions a lot in these situations to at least create the assumption that they might come out on top in the end, which of course they did not. Taiji Ishimori did a good job, and I think that Yoshinobu Kanemaru did better than most expected.
Yeah, I liked the Kid and Ishimori match. I thought it was very good for a Young Lion match. I loved the work between Kid and Ishimori, especially on the ground. Again, like you mentioned, both of these guys gave the Young Lions a lot here, so I really liked that. And I like the technical work, especially by the end. Again, for Ishimori, he didn't have to break out anything too crazy. He just was able to lock in the LaBelle lock for the win after a really good back and forth. So I enjoyed the opening match with Kid and Ishimori. I gave that a 6. I think that might have been my favorite from a pure wrestling standpoint. But the next match, I actually think I might have liked even better from an overall standpoint. Never mind the match, because if you remember, on the first night, they did a tease where Kanemaru knocked Uemura with the bottle of whiskey.
Yep.
And then that played right into this match, where Uemura jumped Kanemaru right away and had great fire, too. I was really impressed. That's something I really always look for with the Young Lions. Mm. It's like, how much passion do you have for this? You know, and he showed a lot here. He even hit a big springboard into the ring, that he did here, or the splash into the ring. I thought was really good on Kanemaru. It's like, Uemura, I think of the three overall, not just these matches, but I think Uemura might be the one that is ahead of, that he's taken a bit of a step of the other two right now in terms of a pure wrestler.
He's gotten noticeably bigger, too.
Yeah, I noticed that. Oh, yeah. When he came out, it's like they had a great camera shot, too, where he walked in the ring and they, like, peered up at him. It's like, yeah, I'm ready. Like, I spent all this time off training and stuff. So, yeah. He even got a knee pad on the next show.
He's evolving.
So, yeah. Yes, exactly. We know he's evolving. But, yeah, Kanemaru, the thing is, he's technically sound. I just don't think he's very exciting as a worker, but here he was in a good role against Uemura, and they also have booked him really well, too. I love the booking of the tournament, because you had this match was placed to his strengths against the young guy, and then you have a great rivalry match in the second round against Ishimori, a match that Ishimori has never won in the past. So I love the booking of the tournament to have those two meet up in the second round.
Absolutely. And then there's our ghetto to our Yado. Man, no. What was this?
So you thought the other one was long at 9 minutes. What?
I see. This is Okada. They've portrayed this man as the world's best and greatest wrestler, the greatest IWGP Heavyweight Champion ever, and he was supposed to have a competitive match with his former manager.
Yes.
And they wanted to make me believe that his former manager wrestling in a shirt.
Yeah.
And in, was it jeans? I think it was jeans. Yeah. Wrestling in a regular street outfit is going to beat the greatest wrestler of all time. I thought that was insulting, the approach that this match took.
It really is.
Because, what do you think of? I mean, there was one person that tweeted me, they wanted to make you believe, I guess, that Ghetto is able to win via nefarious means. I mean, of course they did that.
Yeah.
But why would I buy that Ghetto is able to get the upper hand on Katsushika Okada in any way, shape, or form, even... I mean, the funniest part was when he hit him with a table, and Ghetto is not the biggest guy, not the tallest guy, and he had this table in his hands, and he had to stuck it onto Okada's chest, and Okada had to pretend like he would be kept down by that. That was so stupid.
This whole match was stupid. Like, for all the reasons you're totally saying right now. I will say this. I'll be nice to this. The first part where, you know, he pulled the thing out of his arm sling that he had, and like Okada would counter him at each roll.
Yep.
I thought that was pretty well done. Like, yep. Okada's one step ahead of him, and then what should have happened is he drop kicked him and then hit the Rainmaker
and finished the match in 4 minutes. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. If even that. Like, you know, like they could do something. Maybe even have somebody attack him on his entrance, and you could give Gato a little bit of heat. But then Okada comes back and easily trounces this manager, who's not an active wrestler on this roster. So, to me, I totally agree with everything you said. I will say, too, like, they did all kinds of smoke and mirrors, like, for this match here, to have people running in. Giotto was there. They had all kinds of stuff going on with the kendo stick, the brass knuckles, and things like that. But then there was something that crossed my mind when I watched this. And it's like, Gato suddenly, during the match, whenever he would get on offense, which he did have offense in this match too, like when he was trying to control the match a little, he kind of like cosplayed Switchblade Jay White in a lot of here. And I was thinking, I was like, this match isn't that different than if it was Jay in the ring. Like, because they're doing all this bullcrap, and why are you putting this manager... Like the match is not that different than if Jay was in the ring. So that's what I really can't understand. It was insulting to so many different people, but most of all the fans. I feel like. But I will say I gave this a 1 out of 10. I gave it a little bit more than the 0 on Yano, but don't watch them. Don't watch any of these matches. Yeah. It was very bad.
Yeah, absolutely. So that brings us to this week and the third day of the New Japan Cup. And I gotta say, Dylan, when I watched the show, I was still looking at some of the speaking out stories, so I couldn't really enjoy the third day of the New Japan Cup as I wanted to. Still watched it. It had two great matches. I'd say it had one great match and one good match. Yeah. I think great is a little much for the other one. But it started with an eight-man tag. I don't think we have to get into that. But the first round continued with Zanada defeating Ryusuke Taguchi. And again, I sat there and I watched the match as it was going on. And at some point, I was wondering, when is this going to end?
This was pretty long. This was even longer than the main event on the other show, like the Okada Gato one.
Yeah, a little longer, yes.
Yeah. Well, it ended eventually. I don't know, man. I thought this was okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad. They didn't go too crazy with a lot of the comedy stuff. But even then, it's like the main point of this match, like the finishing stretch, involved the atomic drop being the main weapon.
It was the basic story of the match that Zanada is working over Taguchi's ass to roll him up.
Yeah, like I've seen some people say they didn't go as heavy on comedy, but it's like it wasn't a pure wrestling classic, you know, like in here. Like, let's just calm down on this. Maybe it wasn't as crazy and goofy as we thought, but it was still pretty goofy, like when you think about it. But it wasn't that bad. I always appreciate Taguchi when he's in these matches. Sonata, he's like, you know, I don't know. Like I said, he wasn't that bad here, but it wasn't anything to write home about.
It was a very long, okay match.
Yeah, I gave this a 5. Like, if you gave me a choice between this and the Young Lions matches on the previous show, I'd definitely watch the Young Lions matches over this.
And then I know that you are in love with Sho and Shingo Takagi. And I gotta say, Dylan, I think we dropped a ball in our preview when we didn't
totally. We
didn't count this in, because, of course, Shingo Takagi is the Never Open Weight Champion.
Yeah, see, we definitely dropped the ball. I was thinking about this. I was like, man, it's something that was a total surprise. Nobody I saw predicted it, especially not us. But when it happened, it's like, this makes so much sense.
Yeah.
It's like, why didn't we think of this? It's a rivalry match. It's for the champion is in it. New Japan Cup is upset city. I said that on the last episode. There might be an upset or two that we didn't expect.
Yeah, two and then there was the show.
Yeah, well, see, the thing is, I played that last week, and then you said, no, everybody knows that's going to happen. So, it was an upset that we all expected, to say the least. But this one we didn't expect, so I love that. That was great booking when you think about it, too, even from that perspective, because it's like, we all kind of figured Tanahashi was going to take the fall. Maybe some people here and there might think, oh, maybe Zach will win and Tanahashi will win. But I think for the most part, everyone kind of figured that Tanahashi would lose to set up the tag title match. And here, we had something that nobody was even talking about, but it totally makes sense, and came across like a huge, like to me, this came across like a huge moment in Sho's career that we didn't even think about, but now that it's happened, has really elevated him completely to where he would have been if he had lost. I think I look at him a lot differently than I do now than I did last week. So I think this was an excellent match, obviously. I love that they're such a great fit for each other, too, stylistically. Yeah. Sho is a junior wrestler, but he also can do the power stuff, too.
But I just thought about it. This what I especially noticed is when he did the lariat on Shingo, where they are so similar.
Absolutely. And Sho looks great, great body. He's got a really good look to him, just when he comes out to the ring. It's kind of goofy with the backwards hat and all of that, but I think it really makes him stand out. It makes him something that the fans can, you know, when he comes out, I think the next time there are fans, if they have him in some kind of noteworthy match, he's going to get a big reaction, and he's always got a good reaction. RPG-3K are really good idol-type wrestlers, too, with the women's fans of New Japan. So I think he has a really good look for everybody, and his wrestling is so good that he appeals to pretty much everybody, I think, because he did a great job, and I love the power style of him. And what a surprise win here over Shingo. They did a great job putting over the Shock Arrow, and I thought Shingo, though, we didn't even talk about him yet, because this really was Sho's big moment, but man, Shingo's on another level right now. To me, you can easily make the case he's the best worker in New Japan. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, I always have my favorites, and, you know, we always have our favorites. But to me, he's on a huge level. I even mentioned it on the Patreon show that before this all happened, this virus lockdown happened, if you remember when he won the title, it's like not only did he wrestle good, But he was able to effectively set up feuds with like four different people at once just based on his promos. And I mentioned that when he was in Dragon Gate, I think that really helped him adapt to this promo cutting style more, that is more effective in modern New Japan, because in Dragon Gate for a long time, they were really one of the only companies where people would actually talk on the mic and stuff like that. And in New Japan, he's able to turn that experience and use it to set up rivalries effectively against everybody. And him putting over a show was great. I can't wait for this rematch in front of fans. But I thought this was awesome. I even liked this better than the last match. And I think the finish maybe had a lot to do with it. But I thought this was just a great, great match that they had. My favorite of the tournament, actually.
It was absolutely great, yeah. Yeah. I might have to rewatch this.
Not to interrupt you, but what about when he flipped over Shingo in the corner and then hit the power breaker, like, onto the knees? Like, that was a great freaking spot.
And the selling of that was so great, too, because, of course, Shingo Takagi is a bigger guy than he is, and he sold this weight coming down onto his knees so well. I mean, it probably hurts legitimately.
Yeah.
but he still sold it so great.
Shingo's another of these guys, just like you mentioned with Ishii earlier. It's like Shingo can wrestle anybody in the company too, and that's something that I really love about him, that he can wrestle a small guy, he can wrestle a big guy, he can wrestle another powerful guy, kind of like Sho, like similar to him. Like, he works against everybody.
From the approach, it was similar to the Ishii versus Desperado match. The outcome was different, though, with Sho going over. I have a problem with the shock arrow, though, Dylan. The thing is that he does this cross-arm pile driver too.
Yeah, which you're totally right.
Which is so similar to the shock arrow that I always catch myself thinking, oh, he kicked out of the shock arrow, and then on commentary they are just like, oh, cross-arm pile driver. And then he's going for the shock arrow, which is just a different variation of crossing the arms, but it is the same move.
Yeah, it's like, oh, here's the cross-armed pile driver, and here's the package pile driver. kind of the same, you know. But also another similarity with Shingo Takagi, because he also has the Made in Japan, which is very
confuses me a lot too.
Yeah, see, so these guys are like, these guys need to form a tag team at some point because they're so similar. Like, they even have the same bullcrap signature moves. That's the same as their finishing move. So another way that it's similar. But I agree with you. And on the Made in Japan, actually, I kind of wish that they would kind of pick one or the other and just let that be the big move. Not have these very, very similar moves to be the same. It would be like if somebody, like, imagine if, like, let me think of somebody here, a good thing. Like, if Kobashi, he had the Burning Hammer, but then he also had a setup move, the Argentine Facebuster. It's the same. It's very similar. At least that's a little different, and I'm sure that, like, there's a little difference between Made in Japan and The Last of the Dragon, but it's, like, it's kind of the same, you know?
Yeah. So the next one,
I gave that a 9 out of 10. I thought this was one of the best matches of the year in New Japan.
I would also go between 8 and 9, and that is one of the cage match users did too, 8.68. So definitely worth watching. Definitely. The other one, the next one, Kota Ibushi over Zack Sabre Jr. did 7.13, and I thought it was good. But I definitely thought that the two had the better matches, better one in the G1 Climax last year, for example. Mm-hmm. Still, though, the approach, very clear from the get-go, Zack Sabre working over Kota Ibushi's legs, even on the outside, trying to hold him down, trying to prevent him from using his kicks, prevent him from using the kamigoye, couldn't prevent it in the end, so rock solid story there from wrestling standpoint. It was good, even though some of the variations of different submission moves that Zack did, in some situations I thought that he was just trying to knot him together in any way possible, that it wasn't really a fruitful submission, so to say, and that Kota, and in these situations, didn't really know where he was either. but overall, it was a good one.
Yeah, that's kind of a problem I have with a lot of Zack's matches in Japan. As I've said this before, but his style, especially here, is like World of Sport on speed. that's kind of what I take of him, where it's like he's just doing all these submissions, but they never like really go very far. It's like just like let's do submissions until I can get to my big submission, the one with the really long name that I can't remember and don't want to repeat, however long it is. But it's like let's just build up to this big submission, but the submissions themselves aren't really that effective. And I know it's kind of his style, and I think it actually that's not necessarily a knock because I think it makes him very aesthetically pleasing to watch in an empty arena setting. Whereas some other guys may be too slow for some people's taste, Zach, I think, really works an exciting style, even as a mat wrestler, a technical wrestler. Mm-hmm. I think that helps him in a lot of ways in this setting. But I agree with you, the G1 match was definitely better. I think this is right around the level of their other match, like from last year when they were feuding over the IC title. I gave it a 7 out of 10. You know, I thought it was good, but of the three that I rated 7, I would put this below the first night's matches with Ishii and Desperado and the Honma and Hiromu match.
Yeah, yeah, I would too. Then we had the upset we both called, basically. We, of course, wondered what would be if Tanahashi would move on. But, of course, this is the usual Hiroshi Tanahashi New Japan Cup upset. He lost in the first round, this time to Taichi. This one was almost 22 minutes long. What do you think?
First of all, let's call a spade here. Taichi's interest is so stupid in front of no fans. Like, the lip syncing, I love it with the fans, but without the fans, what?
I didn't watch any of the entrances on this show. I skipped them.
Oh okay. Well,
sure to watch Taichi's entrance to see how stupid it was.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it just. I don't know, man. with Taichi.
Did you expect him to do anything else? I mean, that is his shtick.
Absolutely. You're completely right on that string.
In the end, he's just a fucking douchebag. Why would he do anything else?
Well, he didn't have Miho here, though.
Yeah, I know.
So it made it even worse. Now I'm here. You know, like, he has no manager, no fans. It's just him. But I do. I think I see your point. Like, as a heel wrestler, it's actually kind of brilliant on top of it. But here's my problem with this match. I think this match, more than any of the other ones, would have benefited from the crowd. And I'm not that guy. You know me, Strig. This whole time, I've been the one guy that says, hey, I know everyone thinks this is the worst thing to ever happen to wrestling, there being no fans. But to me, I just kind of like it as an art form. I still like the matches. I can still get into it. I still like the guys. Mm-hmm. I've not been that guy. But for this match in particular, and to exemplify this point, let's look at the very first thing that happens to the match. Tanahashi comes out with a great spikes on his jacket. That a lot of people noticed as well. But he comes out, he poses in the corner, and Taichi powerbombs him out of the corner.
Yeah, he sneaks up to him.
Yeah, exactly. He sneaks up to him and powerbombs him out of the corner. If this had had a crowd, they would have gone nuts at that. Like that would have gotten a huge reaction.
Especially Kurikan, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That would have gotten a huge reaction. And the way Tanahashi's style is, especially in 2020, a lot of his stuff, he's not like somebody like an Ishii or an Ibushi. Where he can just, you know, just do his thing and have great wrestling on his own. He needs the storytelling. He needs the psychology. He needs the crowd. Like, he's somebody that really benefits from that crowd reaction that he could feed off of more than some of these other guys. And I immensely respect Tanahashi and think he's a great worker. But he's just not the same as some of these other guys. So even him, even though I know I didn't really love this match, and I don't think Taichi was good at it, don't get me wrong. Hmm. But I also don't think Tanahashi was able to carry this the way it could have. Obviously with a lot of the shenanigans and stuff, I wasn't going to love it no matter what. But Tanahashi wasn't able to carry this as much as if there had been a crowd.
Yeah, to your first point, I absolutely agree, because everything in this match was built around Taichi getting heat.
Right.
And imagine the crowd reactions when Tanahashi just barely escaped from the ghetto clutch near to the finish.
Yep.
It would have been a crazy crowd reaction. And then the crowd would have been so silent for Taichi in the end winning. And to your second point, Tanahashi was not able to carry it. It's getting more and more clear that the guy is just not able to do such anymore. He's not able to carry the match anymore. from match to match, from singles match to singles match, I noticed that he's getting more and more trouble to even run. He was not able to run here in this match. He's just able to walk a little faster than usual, but he's not able to run. So
you're right.
Overall, this was, I think, the best decision to keep him out of the rest of the tournament because he's just not able to do this anymore.
Absolutely. From a storyline perspective, this totally worked to set up the tag title match.
Yeah.
I do love the booking of Tanahashi teaming with Ibushi as tag team champions. I think it's good for the titles, and it's also good for him, and I think that's something maybe we didn't really address enough when they won the titles. We talked about, oh, this is great to have main eventers as tag champions.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they did something, but it's also really good for him now that he's so broken down.
And it is a sign of Tanahashi slowly coming down from the top.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I definitely think his time has come when it comes to that. Like, I'm not saying he'll never get another title shot again. I'm sure he's got one or two left in him that they'll want to pull that card out just for the fans. Never, even if he doesn't have it left in him, they're going to put him there just because the fans will want to see it. And rightfully so, because he is effectively a legend. But I definitely agree with you. The days of him as the top guy are over in New Japan, and there's nothing wrong with that. He's... Father Time is undefeated, you know, and he's been through a lot in his career. He's, you know, done a lot. So I really appreciated that, the booking of it, even though, like I said, you could say what you want about Taichi, but I definitely agree with you. This was the right decision. If I was booking it, I would have made the same call.
I mean, let's face it, Tanahashi has been in main events for 15 years now.
Yep.
So that is an impressive run. And as you said, Father Time... We have to count it in.
A lot of those main events are epic matches, too, against Okada, like 45, 50 minutes, you know, so.
Absolutely.
Can I just say one thing about this match? Because that Gato clutch, I noted that. I had to bring this to everyone's attention. I have flashbacks to Okada and Makabe on that, because it felt like it was three to me on the Gato clutch. And like maybe he couldn't even kick out right, so he's so broken down. But I felt like the timing was a little bit off on that. But another thing I wanted to say, too, I wanted to bring this to you and see what you thought about it. Wasn't it weird how Zach wasn't there during all this, like especially the post-match?
Yeah,
like it was dope.
Especially in the post-match, I definitely expected both Ibushi and Zach to come out.
Why wouldn't they? And like the way they set this up, it was like Doki was going to challenge for the titles with Taichi.
Imagine.
And I mentioned this. I think this could be secretly brilliant because the Corbin Hall show with the fans, it doesn't matter what they put on the show. Like it's going to be a sellout. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So you do a title match with Doki and Taichi, and then afterwards for a bigger show, put in Zack and Taichi as the tag title.
I mean, they could do that right away after Taichi and Doki lose. They could do that right away with Zack coming in and saying, "Aha, we are the real team."
Oh, that would be a brilliant, like, heel move, too. Yeah. Like, that would be a great storyline. I mentioned this earlier, and now you've made it even better. like this idea that I had. So I think that would be absolutely awesome if they did that. But also another thing, too, about this. This is the one thing I didn't like. Because, you know, they beat him down, it's fine. Like get heat on the challengers. Like, totally made sense. But where was Ibushi during this match when Doki was interfering? Like, this is the one question. This is why I hate about New Japan heat actions, because the baby faces immediately look stupid. Like, whenever they have friends, it's like, where were you this entire match? Like, you're just now coming out? It makes no sense. Like, if that I just mentioned this. Like, if I were in a match and I was facing a dick, you know, somebody with a cheating heel friend, I would hope you would come out with me. You know, and even if I didn't expect it, the first thing that would happen when I got in the ring is I would either point to the back or get on the mic and say, "Stringer, get out here. Like, don't let him interfere," or something. But that never happens in New Japan. It's always a heel advantage. And even then, his advantage was totally ineffective because he got clocked by Doki after he turned around on him.
Yeah.
It was
not the best finish to the show. Match was fine. I was kind of surprised that Taichi got the pinfall after the Black Mephisto.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think that it matters anyway. So.
Now, they push him relatively strong, like for a mid-card guy like him. Mm-hmm. Like, he's gotten pretty strong respect. He did beat Ishii last year, too, in the G1 match. And that was a great match. But I didn't think much of it, to be honest with you. And I thought it was, again, the right decision. Whatever you think of Taichi, I thought for overall, good stuff, logical storytelling, sets up a tag title match, maybe even two, if they want to give Doki a shot.
Yeah, so that brings us to the fourth and final day of first round action in the New Japan Cup. Again, from a empty Curtain Hall, June 23rd. Opening match was Bushi against Yo. And you know, Dylan, we praised Sho a lot on this show. And if I was Yo right now, and if there was, let's say, if there was a barbershop window around, I'd be having eyes in the back of my head.
Listen, okay. First of all, I gave that match a 5, by the way, to Taichi and Tanahashi, just for numerical sake. For Yo, though, he did all he could do. He got a new mask with the LED lights on it. This is, what more do you want from him, Striga? Like, this is his effort to stand out now.
Yeah.
Were you impressed?
I was not impressed at all with this match.
All right, well, what about the mask?
Well, same goes for the mask.
Man, you're killing them. You're killing Yo right now. But come on, man. Yeah, you're right. You're right. This wasn't good.
Yeah, and about Bushi, it's the same talking point we always have. This MX doesn't work as a finisher.
Man, Bushi is like these two, both of these guys. I mentioned it again, but I haven't done any kind of reaction show for the Patreon. I saved it for the free show. Now we're getting to stuff I haven't talked about before. But on the last show, when I talked about Night 3, I said, if this match goes over 5, they've accomplished something. Because these two are the most generic wrestlers in New Japan to me. Like both of them. They're not terrible, but they bring nothing to the table that like a million other people couldn't do. And Yo especially, you're right. Like, he really needs to step it up because Sho is getting this great push. The fans are behind him. And Yo's just like, you have an LED mask. Like, this match was sloppy, too. These guys didn't even wrestle good together. Like, Yo and Bushi, I was not impressed at all.
Yeah, there were multiple attempts of Yo getting Bushi into the Stargazer. I think this is the name of the submission move that he uses.
Yeah, it's kind of like a cap slicer type of deal.
Yeah. And all the time, it looked like Bushi wasn't really there for it, and Yo had to try, and it didn't really work out.
There wasn't even any energy during the opening portion of the match. It was just like two guys wrestling. I was not impressed by this match at all. I gave it a 4 out of 10. I don't even think it made it up to 5.
No.
Like, 2-star special in the world of Meltzer, or whatever. But and this went 16 minutes, too.
And that is like, really unfortunate, because, I mean, in a regular setting of the New Japan Cup, neither of these guys would have gotten a shot.
Yeah, you'd think they'd be motivated, you know, like to really go all out. But we've seen Yo had some okay matches last year. He had one against, I think, Osprey that was really good. Red Narita, too, he had a good match against him as well. Bushi, he had like maybe one good match or two in the Best of Super Juniors, but these guys, just to me, there's just not a lot they bring to the table. They both need a lot of big changes to their wrestling game. Everything about them, really, there's nothing about them that really attaches them. At least Bushi does have the aesthetic with LIJ. Yo has got to go back to the drawing board on a lot of things, I feel like. But this wasn't even a good match to me. I thought it was well below average.
Was Yoshihashi versus Hiroyoshi Tenzan a good match to you?
Oh, absolutely. This was much better than the other one.
I agree.
A lot of people are saying that this could be the best match of the tournament.
I saw that too. I was a little baffled by it, to be quite honest.
Yeah, but two, Striga, is all I'm saying. Two messages saying it was the best of the tournament. And you were baffled by it.
Yeah, I mean... I was into the match, definitely. I was into the match. Yoshihashi, he delivered in this situation, and Hiroyoshi Tenzan once again stepped up big, even did the moonsault again, even did a moonsault that landed pretty well.
Yeah, way better than our Patreon series.
Yeah. he's picking up, man. Yoshihashi was there too, delivering his swanton bomb that actually looked pretty good too, better than usually. I thought both guys put a lot of effort in it, and while this match was longer than the opener, in my opinion, it didn't feel as long, because what Bushi and Yo lacked, the energy and the fighting spirit, this was what Yoshihashi and Tenzan had.
Absolutely. I completely agree with everything you said. Yoshihashi, when he came walking out, he looked horrible. Like just what was that he was wearing? That green thing?
Was it supposed to be a face mask?
Maybe he's following social distancing.
Yeah.
Maybe. But he came out like, it was like a green and black poncho, almost. And this yellow face mask. Like, that was a part of it. It looked horrible. Like, that Yoshihashi, I'm a fan of. And again, like, we see it here. Every time he's asked to have a big match, he steps up huge. Like, it has a great job. So I don't know where this reputation is that he sucks so much, because last year he had Ibushi in the New Japan Cup. Or Ishii, too. The year before that, he had Ibushi. That was a great match. And we even talked about it on this show. And now here, when it gets Tenzan, who's definitely no Ibushi or Ishii at this point in 2020, and still, we had another really good match. I thought Hashi looked really good. Tenzan, I thought, again, he's somebody that you could count on to always try his best. You know, when we were doing that series about his career, every year in the G1, not all of his matches were, you know, 5 stars or whatever, or 10 out of 10 matches, but he always put in the effort. He tried really hard. And I thought this was right on the edge. You could borderline this as a great match. You know, like, you could go either way on it, but I thought this was a really strong performance and one of the better ones of the tournament, in my opinion. I thought this was better than Zack and Ibushi, believe it or not. Maybe I'm nuts, but I thought this was a really good match.
I thought so, too. I mean, these two put a lot of effort in it. What brought it a little down for me was the finish.
Yeah.
Because I don't buy Yoshihashi's butterfly lock to begin with. It is okay when he does it on young lions, and it is okay when he does it on guys that are smaller than him. But whenever he does it on a big guy like Hiroyoshi Tenzan, it just doesn't look dangerous.
Absolutely. Like, this sucked. This was the worst part of the match to me. That's the one thing about him that I think does also take away from some of him. He comes out looking terrible, and then some of his moves, specifically the butterfly lock, which is more like a half butterfly lock, it's not even a full butterfly. He has that and the drop kick against the ropes. They're terrible moves. Like, if he could get rid of them, why can't he just use Somato as his finisher? You know, like, that would be a lot better. Like, don't you think? That's a way better move than the freaking... Or when he used Karma. I mean, I guess they kind of took it away from him because Shingo kind of has the same move. But still, like, if he used that as a finisher, that's a lot better than this stupid butterfly lock. But I agree with you. I think that definitely took it down a little bit. But still, I thought it was a good match. I thought the wrestling was, like, 99% good, except for that those lackluster moves. And I was really impressed with both men. But, yeah, it was a good match. I agree with your criticisms as well.
Yeah, yeah. We had an 8-man tag match where the story was that Toru Yano wants to cut Hiromu's hair. And he had this what's it called?
Hair clipper.
Yeah, yeah, the hair clipper, right? Hair clipper. And he was chasing him with the hair clipper, and Hiromu was so afraid of the hair clipper that he ran away.
Another way me and Hiromu are similar. if someone ran at me with hair clippers,
I can totally relate to Hiromu here, because at several points in my life, my mom threatened to cut my hair at night, always jokingly, but I always wondered, is she serious? And, I mean, that was Hiromu here. Is Toru Yano serious? Is he joking? Is he not? Who knows?
I mean, we know what the story of their match is going to be on the next show. He also did tie him with the tape again. Mm-hmm. He brought his trusty tape here, so... Who knows what that match is going to look like, that singles match. But, you know, if you watch it not as a match, maybe as, like, very slapstick type of comedy,
yeah.
Like, you know, it could have value, I guess. But Hiromu is very charismatic. So if anybody's going to make this kind of thing work, I think it's him. Because he really sold this completely over the top. They carried him out.
He had to jump up the stairs because he was still tied together.
Yes. I like that at least, I will say this, I like that at least in these build-up matches that they took the time to actually build stuff up, like for the next matches. And even in the other match on night 3, they at least continued the Suzuki and Nagata feud. And here they set up a second round match, even though it was as like goofy as possible. Still, it's better than nothing. It's better than a generic match. So I will give them that points for that. But we'll see how it goes. We'll see how the singles match turns out.
Yeah, so next up in the tournament, we got Hiroki Goto going over Yujiro Takahashi, who once again was accompanied by Yado. So we got some shenanigans here. But I gotta say, Dylan, this surprised me. I thought Yujiro Takahashi was better than I expected him to be. Of course, Hiroki Goto played a role in this because Goto is just a great wrestler. But these two got 16 minutes, and I thought they filled these 16 minutes well. They even gave Yujiro Takahashi a couple of believable near falls over Hiroki Goto, because, I mean, why wouldn't Yujiro Takahashi beat Hiroki Goto in the first round? That is something that I could believe. But in the end, Hiroki Goto won the match. He did some interesting stuff. For example, the GTR off the ropes. And then finished him with a GTR after he got rid of Yado on the apron. So, I mean, the effort that Yujiro put in here was pretty good.
Oh, totally agree. This is another match. The other one, I gave that an 8 out of 10. Tenzan and Yoshihashi. I went borderline on it, but I'll give him the Yoshihashi bump. If there was a 7.5, I'd probably give it that. But I give him the YH and Tenzan bump because I like both guys, actually. And here, Yujiro is another guy similar to Yoshihashi. His reputation is as like the worst worker on the roster.
Yes, it's dirt poor.
Yeah, but if you remember his singles match versus Juice, he really stepped up huge in that match when they faced the New Japan Cup. And it was either last year or maybe 2 years ago. But he had a match against Juice, which was really strong. And here against Goto, I thought he looked a fine. I'm not saying he's like, you know, Misawa or anything like that, but he was a good. He's a good mid card heel. Like that's really what I think about Yujiro. He's not a bad worker. He never does anything important, and his gimmick is super sleazy, which I think kind of plays into that. But if you just look at him as a worker, he's not that bad. And I thought this was a decent match. If you had cut out all the bullcrap with Yado, I think this could have actually been a pretty good match. But as it wasn't bad. I liked it better than the opener, for sure, with Bo, Bushi, and Yo. So I thought that, you know, they did some good work. They built up to some big stuff. I always appreciate Goto's ability to try new moves and keep his matches fresh, much like the GTR from the ropes. It always feels like he has a different way to go about his matches. Especially if he's winning, he always builds to different things. So that's something I really appreciate about Goto. They did stuff with the headbutt. Good stuff there. And I thought this was a solid match. So yeah. Goto had a really good shot here in this bracket. I would say if you look at the names left, I think he would have to be the favorite at this point. So good stuff there. I gave this a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I thought it was really good too. So but this is once again a match that a crowd would have loved because of all the heat that Yujiro got on him. Yep. And I mean, the crowd would have loved the main event as well, but for different reasons, because we had Evil going over Satoshi Kojima in 20 minutes. And, you know, Satoshi Kojima is a guy that is still able to do these big singles matches. And Evil, on the other side, is a guy that will probably never go to the heights that Satoshi Kojima was at when he was there in the main event. But Evil is still a guy that can believably throw big bombs with a veteran like Satoshi Kojima and go over him without people wondering why that happened. And that is exactly what happened here. Two guys throwing big bombs at one another, Dylan.
Yeah, I liked it. There was some good stuff here. When both guys got down to business, I really appreciated their clothesline battles and stuff they would have here because it makes perfect sense with Kojima, the strongest arm in the world, hit some big stuff there. They built a match around that, which I thought was really smart. Mm-hmm. And Evil's somebody that I really have my eyes on in this tournament. I mean, you know, we can all talk about guys like Hiromu and Sonata and, you know, guys that we want to look at and maybe they're going to win or whatever. I don't think Evil is really a threat to win the tournament, but he's somebody that I really feels like can gain a lot because he needs to step up, in my opinion. If you look at the last year and a half of his run, it hasn't been great. Like, not only in success, but also his performances. I remember in February, he had a really kind of lame match with Ishii. And if you have a lame match with Ishii, you're in a bad place. So I really wanted to see him step up here. Some stuff I don't like about him, similar to how I mentioned with Yoshihashi, like, he has a lot of good about him, but then there's a couple of things that I really don't like. And Evil kind of has the same thing. Like, the stuff with the chair, the stuff where he uses red shoes as a, like, impromptu partner, I'm really not into that at all. I don't think it's very good, nor is it very effective in the match. But still, once they got back down to business, I thought it was a pretty good match between both men. As I expected, they had a long way to go, but I thought they filled it pretty well. And they're good wrestlers to do it as well. I think Evil, the talent is there. I wonder if motivation is a problem sometimes with him. So hopefully he can have a really good match. Like, he has a chance with Goto to have something really special, I feel like.
Yeah, I really like the finish of this one too, because Kojima and Evil basically did these lariat exchanges. And Kojima then was so sure that he would be coming out on top that he practically ran into the Evil, into the STO, and he had his right arm out and he was swinging for the lariat. Evil caught that and was able to hit the STO from there right away. So that, in my opinion, was very good.
Yeah, very cool finish, too. That's another thing that boosted this up. Yeah, it was a good match. I gave it a 6 out of 10, same as Yujiro and Goto. Nothing I'm going crazy over, mm-hmm. but I thought it was a good main event, and I hope that Evil and Goto, because I think they're stylistically a really good matchup. I always expect high things from their matches, so I hope that these guys can bring something really good. And, you know, I have to say, overall, I think the tournament in the first round has been booked really well up and down. When you look at the winners, the storylines you could have, the matchups, outside of maybe, you know, Hiromu and Yano, because I want to see personally from a selfish perspective, Hiromu have great matches with everybody, but Yano's somebody that, you know, really fits him aesthetically, like two kind of crazy, kooky guys. So it totally makes sense. I think there's been no real flaws, and I love the upset of Sho over Shingo and Nagata over Suzuki as well. The two matches I got wrong, I was really happy with both of them, and I think the second round's going to be good. So, yeah, I thought it was a good first round overall.
You mentioned the second round. We have the matches now for the second round starting actually starting tomorrow.
Right
now. We're recording this. So the second round is Togi Makabe against Tomohiro Ishii, Toru Yano against Hiromu Takahashi, Katsuhiko Okada against Yuji Nakata, and Yoshinobu Kanemaru against Taichi Ishimori on the 24th. And then there is another break. There is another week in between. We have the show on the 1st of July with the second round matches of Taichi against Kota Ibushi. Once again, of course, setting up the tag title match there. Then we have Zanada against Sho. Yoshihashi against Bushi. Man.
Bushi.
and Evil going against Hiroki Goto. So, a couple of very good matches coming ahead.
Potential LIJ semifinals there. Bushi versus Evil. Yeah. We could be there. Mm-hmm. So what do you think after one round? I know Shingo was somebody you really talked up big as a potential winner last time, and he's out.
Yep. I swung into your direction, and I was with Hiromu Takahashi.
See, that's where my heart's going. You know, my head still thinks Sonata's probably going to win, but my heart says Hiromu, so that's what I'm going to go with here. And I haven't changed on that. Do you feel anything different, or do you still think Hiromu?
No, I still feel Hiromu. Zanada is possible. Let's say Evil defeats Goto. That would mean in the semifinals, he'd face the winner of Yoshihashi against Bushi, so final is possible for Evil.
Yeah. I like, they have a role for him. You know, if they want to really push Evil, Goto and Evil is going to be interesting because in the other match, you'd have to have Bushi go over a heavyweight, which seems unthinkable. Even though it's Yoshihashi, Bushi in the semifinals is not what anybody wants to see in the New Japan Cup. But otherwise, Goto, like, you'd have to have an inter-tag team match with Goto and Yoshihashi. If you remember, in one of the other six-mans, or the eight-mans, they actually worked a lot as a tag team. They had tag team moves. Goto and Yoshihashi mm-hmm. did. So they established them as more of a team. So that could be kind of an interesting matchup if they do that. But I also think it's very likely, too, that Evil could beat Goto so they don't have the intra-team matchup. Kind of similar to like how they did it with Tana and Ibushi, like one would win, one would lose. You think one of the guys would win and one would lose to set up that, but I don't know. It's an interesting bracket. I really like the round, and I hopefully the second can keep it up. Are there any matches you look forward to? Nagata and Okada?
Yeah, obviously, I mean, Nagata and Okada, that. Obviously. Evil versus Goto, I'm looking forward to. It should be another hard hitter. Very interesting should be Ishimori against Yoshinobu Kanemaru, too.
Yeah, that was one I was looking forward to, too.
Junior heavyweight match here with two guys that beat Young Lions in the first round and two guys that showed that they are very technical sound, too. So, yeah, should be good.
And they have a long rivalry against each other, too, back to Noah.
Yep.
So I really appreciate that. Like I said, really happy with the first round of the Cup, and I can't wait to see where it goes from here.
Absolutely. So, yeah. That's it, basically, for this episode. I don't want to stretch it too long because, as I said, the New Japan Cup is still going on. So we are both still in our hearts. We are with Hiromu.
Yes.
Your head still says Zanada. My head. I don't know what my head says. maybe Evil in the finals, but I'm not sure what else I'm gonna pick right now. So just,
man, you're big on Evil in this tournament. I gotta give you props.
It's just because of the brackets that he has in front of him. You know,
that's true. And remember that he would also have to face whoever wins the other one to get to the finals, Sanada or Ibushi. I think whoever wins that matchup is probably going to win Sanada and Ibushi eventually, yep. Unless Tachi beats Ibushi here, I guess. But, Sanada or Ibushi, it'll be very interesting. I think that would be a great match if they did that storyline-wise, Sanada versus Evil. I think that would be very interesting for a lot of ways for them to do that.
Yeah, they could actually finally do something with the generic LIJ member not doing the fist bump thing.
Yeah, well, wasn't that Shingo?
Yeah, it was Shingo.
Yeah.
It's always someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. See, so, I mean, and plus, that's proven that if you disrespect LIJ, you might lose. That's like some bad misfortunes going on. And on Naito's birthday, on top of it as well. So that was another, he should have thought about that a little bit more before he did the disrespect.
Disrespect.
Yeah. But it should be interesting to see where they go.
It definitely should. So, that's it for New Japan this time. That's it for the Eastern Lariat this time around too. Dylan, I want to thank you very much for our discussion at the beginning of our show. And of course, I want to thank you very much once again for doing this show on New Japan with me. It was again a fun time to be had.
Yeah, not always easy to have discussions like that. You know, that's not really our lane when it comes to this show a lot of times, but I thought it was important to have, considering the landscape of the world. So I was very happy. Hopefully the listeners enjoyed it as well. I think hopefully everybody can check things out and support everybody out there that needs it right now. Anybody that needs support, check that out. And more than anything, like you said, hopefully we can all get back to a place where everybody, no matter who you are, what kind of gender you are, like whatever, we can all enjoy wrestling, and this can be something bright and big in our lives and in our hearts once again, just like it used to be and like it should be.
Absolutely. I absolutely 100% agree with that. And on that note, we'll end the show, and I want to thank everybody who listened to this show. I know it's not easy right now to follow wrestling, but it's, in my opinion, it's very important that we stick with it and we change it for the better. So thank you all for listening to this show. And goodbye.
Sayonara.
Streaming worldwide. This is the MLWRadio.com network.